Welcome to Gospel Tangents, the best source for Mormon history, science, and theology. I'm Rick Bennett. We're continuing our series on the Gospel Topics essays. This time we're going to talk about DNA in the Book of Mormon with Dr. Thomas Murphy of Edmonds College in Washington State. We'll learn more about this and how does an anthropologist have expertise in this topic. We'll talk about it more, and don't forget to buy the Gospel Topics series by Matt Harris and Noel Bringhurst. So it's a fantastic book. Now back to our conversation. All right, welcome to Gospel Tangents. I'm excited to continue our series on the Gospel Topics essays, and I have a DNA expert, so I'm really excited about this. And it's not Ugo Perego, and it's not Simon Southerton, who I've previously interviewed. So could you go ahead and tell us who you are and where you teach?
Well, hi, CM, or greetings. My name is Thomas Murphy. I'm coming to you from the lands of the Stahopes, or Stahomish peoples, one of the Coast Salish nations of Western Washington. And I'm an adopted guest in their land. It's been an honor for me to work with Stahopes people, actually teaching their children and employees and tribal members at the Tulalip Indian Reservation. I also have been honored to travel with the Speckwa, or the Blue Heron Canoe family of the Snohomish tribe of Indians, and with the Samish, the Snoqualmie, and the Gnat canoe families. The Gnat is a Haida and Tlingit canoe family. For the last 10 years, I've been taking students on an annual tribal canoe journey, traveling with these nations along the shores of the Salish Sea and beyond, visiting the ancestral places and traveling those traditional pathways, while we kind of bring together science and traditional knowledge to solve problems in today's world. I want to also honor my ancestors. Many of them come from Northern, and most of them come from Northern and Western Europe. Some joined the Mormon Trail west, and even pulled those hand carts that you've heard about. Other ancestors are from the Kaneohaka, or the Mohawk Nation. Mohawk is one of the six nations of the Haudenosaunee, or the Iroquois. Those ancestors joined the Mormons a little later, moved to southern Idaho in 1901. And I grew up in southern Idaho in the late 60s, 70s, 80s. And really loved that area. I'm now, as I said, in Western Washington. I studied at the university, or actually Utah State University for a little while, then the University of Iowa. Yeah, I didn't graduate from there. I kind of dropped out the first time I went to college, and later transferred to the University of Iowa and earned a bachelor's in anthropology and religion, and then came back west to the University of Washington in Seattle, the city named after Swatel, who is a Duwamish and Suquamish leader. And I studied anthropology at UW, earning a master's and a PhD. And during that time, I kind of, the big part of my career pathway was looking at that intersection between traditional indigenous knowledge and modern science. I worked in Central America, Mexico, with the Zapotec people, Mayan people, Nahua peoples. One of my favorite projects was working in the Zapotec region, the Sierra Madre Mountains in Oaxaca in southern Mexico. And there we studied the traditional uses of plants and animals, the traditional taxonomies in Zapotec, in the Zapotec language, and how that compared and contrasted with modern scientific taxonomies. And amazingly, we found a lot of congruence between kind of the scientific view of the world and the traditional knowledge view of the world. We weren't the first researchers to do that. Many others have found that there's this fascinating similarity between Linnaean taxonomies and traditional taxonomies of indigenous people all over the world, in ways that, you know, can't be explained by diffusion or passing of the knowledge, but instead by some sort of maybe innate way of understanding the world. And so that was a really exciting project to work on. I eventually managed to get employment at what's now Edmonds College, used to be Edmonds Community College, in Linwood, Washington, which is just north of the Seattle. And I've been here now since 1998. At Edmonds, I've built an environmental anthropology field school that works together with Coast Salish Nations on traditional knowledge and modern science projects. So we work together to bring scientific practices together with traditional practices. So, you know, to give you a few examples, we travel on tribal canoe journey as we're looking at ways of navigation. We're looking at the ecology. We're looking at even oceanography and the physics of a canoe. And in connection with that cultural experience of traveling those ancestral pathways, we do a lot of ecological work, restoration of salmon habitat, shellfish, monitoring of shellfish habitat. I'm also, by kind of hobby and love of wildlife, I'm a wildlife tracker. And so I bring that that knowledge and skill into my work with the tribes. And we work with elders to look at kind of traditional knowledge of plants and animals in our region, and then bring in the latest technology of motion-sensitive cameras and monitor wildlife in kind of the wildlife corridors, along highways and roads. We do a lot of what we call road ecology, where we're monitoring the wildlife that navigate under and around and over our roads. We did the monitoring along the I-90 corridor for some wildlife passage structures. A couple dozen of those have been installed along I-90 going east over Snoqualmie Pass, and at least from our area east. And so we monitor the wildlife to help the State Department of Transportation figure out where to put the wildlife passage structures, and then to evaluate their effectiveness. We do that locally in the lowlands of Western Washington as well, with some wildlife passage structures in Snohomish County and in some local cities. And then we work along the green belts in our neighborhoods. Actually, it's kind of fun taking my students out into their own neighborhoods. And we have in these green belts in our neighborhoods that are protected because of the Clean Water Act. And so we put wildlife cameras in there, teach them how to recognize animal track and sign, and then use that knowledge to help inform our tribes, our cities and counties, how to more effectively manage that intersection between humans and wildlife.
Oh, cool.
Of course, I kind of left out so far that the DNA work, which I know is what you're most interested in.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, you're the first anthropologist, I believe, that I've ever interviewed. But I'm sure some of my listeners will be like, well, what does an anthropologist know about DNA? So I'd love to hear that.
Yeah, excellent question. So what lured me to anthropology as a discipline was the ability to be a natural scientist, a social scientist, and a scholar of the humanities all in the same discipline. Not too many disciplines offer you that opportunity. And in fact, teaching at a community college has really given me the opportunity to do that as a career, you know, to have that breadth that you don't see that often today among scientists and scholars. And so anthropology is the study of humans. We can have four major subfields: what we call cultural anthropology, and that's the study of human culture; linguistic anthropology, study of human languages; and archaeology, the study of past societies through the artifacts and features that they leave behind, and biological anthropology, which is the study of humans as biological organisms. That's where the DNA comes in. But I've also led archaeological projects. In fact, one of the ones we did locally was some archaeological work on stream restoration projects where we helped Tulalip tribes, Snohomish County, and the city of Mukilteo bring salmon back to the site of the Point Elliott Treaty, which is what the treaty that local Coast Salish tribes signed that allowed citizens from the United States to come into this territory. Well, that treaty had promised the tribes that they could hunt and fish in their usual and custom places forever. But within a century of that signing of that treaty, salmon had been exterminated from that stream, right in the shadows of the very treaty. And so we worked to remove basically transportation infrastructure that impeded the passage of salmon. We restructured the stream to get around those obstacles and brought salmon back to the site of the Point Elliott Treaty. And that I led both the archaeological side of that project and the ecological side of that project. So archaeologically, there was a Japanese community in this gulch. It's called Japanese Gulch. They'd lived there from 1903 to 1930. And our stream restoration projects had direct impacts on the cultural resources that they'd left behind. And so we had to mitigate for that impact by doing some test plots and some excavations and removing those artifacts that would be damaged by the stream restoration. And so I led that archaeology project and the ecological, the biological side of it. Other things that I've done on the linguistic side, that project in Oaxaca with the Zapotec was a linguistic anthropology project. So we're looking at the structure of the Zapotec language and its relation to scientific taxonomy. And cultural anthropology, which is my primary training, is many of my projects have been focused on the cultural aspects. And that's where I've done work with Nahua, Mayan Mormons, and looked at their understandings of Mormonism from those indigenous perspectives. So I did field work for my dissertation in southern Mexico and central Mexico. There I worked with a community known by the name of El Reino de Dios en su Plenitud, or the Kingdom of God in its fullness. This was a community founded by Margarito Bautista, who was a Nahua convert to Mormonism in the early 20th century, who led and participated in a schismatic movement in Mexico in the 1930s when about a third of the Mexican members separated from the church, church. Yeah. Yeah, and they created their own church that was Nahua-based. Yeah. Yeah, that was Nahua-based. And eventually, Margarito Bautista gets excommunicated. And he gets excommunicated not just from the LDS Church, but also from the Third Convention, which was the group that separated from the LDS Church. And then he formed his own church that brought back polygamy, the United Order. And when I was there in the 90s, it was amazing that they started the United Order back in the 40s, and they celebrated their 50th anniversary while I was there. I wrote about that for a Sunstone article. But not too many United Order communities survive 5 decades or more, and yeah, they're still going, and it's the 2020s now. So wow. You know, that's 7 decades of practice of the United Order. Not perfectly, of course. They've had their struggles, but not too many Mormon communities can do that. So that's an example of some of the cultural anthropology. And the DNA work, of course, is what most people in Mormon studies know me for. And that is for an article I wrote for an anthology called American Apocrypha. It was published by Signature Books in 2002. And I wrote an article called Lamanite Genesis, Genealogy, and Genetics. Mm-hmm. And the backstory of that article was that I'd been on some discussion boards. Those were, you know, what we did before Reddit and before Facebook and those sorts of things. But I was on in this discussion board, MormonL and LDSNet, and having a number of discussions with people kind of wrestling with Mormon issues. And one of those was a guy by the name of Brent Metcalf. And Brent asked me, as an anthropologist, for some help locating. Well, first he asked if I'd be interested in, or knew somebody who would be interested in, writing an article about the new DNA research and its implications for the Book of Mormon. And this was a topic that was of quite a bit of interest to me. I teach biological anthropology courses that DNA work is kind of a central part of those classes. Mm-hmm. In fact, we get to extract our own DNA and take the students through that process.
Now, I don't mean to interrupt you, but I need to have you twist Brent's arm. I've tried to get him on my podcast, and he keeps blowing me off. So see if you can put in a good word for me.
Put in a good word for you? Yeah. I'll send him a link to this.
Yeah, I want to talk to him about Hoffman stuff, and he's like, I've already talked about that. I'm like, no, we got to talk about this stuff. This is good stuff. But yeah, that's a great book, American Apocrypha, so I'll just put a plug in for that. So anyway.
Yes. So, you know, I was very interested in the DNA. Like I said, it was very much part of my training and my teaching.
I hope you enjoyed our conversation with Dr. Thomas Murphy. In our next conversation, we're going to talk about how church leaders reacted to Thomas's research. It turns out the media found out about it too.
It kind of went crazy after that, you know, and the next couple of weeks I was, you know, television, newspaper, reporters, following me to class.
For those of you who are interested in the entire interview uncut without any interruptions, sign up at patreon.com/gospeltangents and you can hear the entire interview for just $5 a month. Also, we have other tiers. If you'd like to subscribe on our website at gospeltangents.com, click on the yellow subscribe button and you can subscribe for $10. You can also do that on Patreon and get a PDF transcript. We've also got some other ones for $15 and $20 if you'd like to get those as well. If you're interested in individual transcripts, go to Amazon.com and do a search for Gospel Tangents interview, and you can see our past interviews there in paperback form. So just check out Gospel Tangents. We're always updating those. For the latest updates on Facebook, go to Facebook.com/Gospel Tangents and you can see our latest updates there. We're also on Twitter at Gospel Tangents. Of course, you can subscribe on Apple Podcasts at tinyurl.com/gospeltangents. And please give us a 5-star rating for those of you who listen to audio only. So once again, thanks for listening. Click here to subscribe, here for a transcript, and over here we've got some more of our great videos. Thanks again.